Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. And we're excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts. We got a show to recap the UFC fight night that just took place here in Las Vegas with Song Yadong defeating Chris Gutierrez. We'll chat about that. And of course, it is fight week, UFC 296, 6 days from now. It's Saturday, December 16th, and Goz and I will be hosting a watch-along for that final pay-per-view of the year with two title fights, Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington and Alexandre Pantoja versus Brandon Royval. So aside from that, some really, really nice pivotal matchups. The welterweight division is going to be popping on that night. So you'll see a lot of reminders by us, not just on Spinning Backclick tomorrow, our two shows this week, our social media. That's what it is. It's these watch-alongs that you always hear us talking about. Watch the fights along with us, whether you order the pay-per-view or not. But if you don't order it, we'll be your eyes and ears, and we'll tell you exactly what's happening in real time. All right, we also have a guest for you. Sam Alvey, Karate Combat, is in Las Vegas, and we had a chance to catch up with him recently, so we'll play that for you. The former UFC veteran is now doing his thing at Karate Combat. One thing you can never say about Sam is that he doesn't come to scrap whatever the event. All right, guys, so we'll end on a good note talking UFC 296. Let's just get the sour taste out of our mouth and discuss this fight night. Now, we don't mean disrespect to the fighters that fought. Those fights are just as good as 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, whatever. I think it's just more than anything goes, it happens to fall at a time in the calendar, if you're a sports fan and you happen to like other sports other than face punching, it just gets lost. I mean, Goes and I were at the Lakers game. The NBA has this in-season tournament that they debuted this year, and our squad, our lifelong squad, was in Las Vegas. All right, they're the LA Lakers, not the Las Vegas Lakers. So they were in Las Vegas, and a good friend of ours came through with some tickets, so we had that on our mind. My high school was playing a state championship. I could have watched that on TV. They were giving out the Heisman Trophy again. No, an SC guy didn't win it. It's usually us or Alabama or something. But you know, between that, normal life, Christmas parties. Yeah, man, this poor thing just kind of got left off to the side. Not too many people were chatting about it.
Just wasn't all that sexy. The matchup itself, main event, is interesting on paper, but I mean, it's just if you were to put this on a pay-per-view, it wouldn't have been this weekend's pay-per-view probably wouldn't have been on the main card, right?
Probably not. No, not on this one. This one's pretty good. This one's pretty solid.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's just so much competition, so many other things to do that this one just kind of fell under the radar a little bit. And honestly, when it all played out, wasn't the greatest card of all time.
Yeah. There's just weeks the UFC needs to cool it. I realize they're going to have the December pay-per-view. But unless you do something like, I mean, it wasn't even on ESPN for crying out loud. So unless you're going to do something like that's on, you know, CBS, ABC, ESPN, earlier in the day, dude, during December, you're just, I mean, pretty soon, I'm surprised the NFL hasn't done that. They start playing their Saturday games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got college bowls happening next week as well. It'll be some of the ones that won't affect the UFC, granted. But still, there's just, I haven't even mentioned English Premier League or hockey or anything else that's going on. But yeah, man, this poor thing just got lost in the shuffle. So let's give you guys the results, and then we'll put it to bed and move on. And I got to say, Song Yadong is awesome. He really is something else, man. Chinese bantamweight defeated Chris Gutierrez, who's not shabby either, by the way, and pretty unanimously across 25 minutes. He is just on a tear right now. And with the UFC always looking for international superstars from countries that either bring eyeballs or support their guy or gal, this is music to their ears. So congrats to Song Yadong for winning that fight. Khalil Roundtree defeated Anthony Smith in the co-main event. Shut him down in round three. Those are my favorite wins, goes, is round three in a three-round fight, or rounds mm-hmm. four and five in a five-round fight, when you just have had a lot and then you still get the finish. So we don't have to discuss referees or judges or nothing like that. They settle it. But I also like the fights where both guys or gals looked good. Like, I don't want to see a runaway and then somebody win in round five. I like to see competition unfold, strategies unfold, corners go to work, and then something happens. Now, in this case, I like both guys. We've covered Roundtree as a amateur fighter at Tough Enough. We've called his fights. And then as far as Anthony Smith, he was actually a colleague of ours, all the way dating back to the Sirius XM days, and we've covered him even before he came back to the UFC. So someone had to go down. In this case, it was Anthony Smith. Nasrat Haqparast defeated Jamie Mullarkey. Quick work there. Minute 44 in. Put him out with some punches. Sorry, the dog scared me. I thought he was peeing right now, but he's chewing on something. Okay, and Tim Elliott stepped in on late notice. He submitted Sumudarshi. And Andre Muniz shook off his losing streak. He defeated Jun Yong Park. Those were your top fights. Any thoughts on any of those goes, including the main event, of course, with Song Yadong?
Well, I think quietly Khalil Roundtree is starting to become a fan favorite. He's different. I don't know how to describe him to you. He just looks at things differently. And when he fights, like, he's just got so much ferocity behind his punches. Like, he's one of those fighters where if everything clicks for him on that night, he's one of the top dogs. But usually one little piece is kind of missing. And this was one of those performances where nothing was missing. And he just caught Anthony quite a few times. But finally, that closing sequence was kind of weird, because it almost seemed like Anthony wasn't dazed, but his body wasn't responding. And his legs just kind of gave out. And he hit the deck. And props to Khalil Roundtree, because he kind of took a chance. Like, it wasn't one of those where you see the guy's eyes and the roll back into the back of their heads or something like that. It was just kind of odd, and he could have followed up with a really bad punch. He didn't, and Keith Peterson called an end to the action. So he kind of got away with one in a way, but props to him. You know, that was a pretty decent fight. And then main event was just kind of slow. Chris Gutierrez, leading up to the fight, you know, during fight week, was just talking about how much nerves he had and all that. And it really did play out that way. Like, when you watch his performance, you kind of, like, there are no explanations for certain things he was doing. He just really did look nervous out there. And that sucks, because he's a pretty decent fighter, you know, but I think the moment caught up with him. And then if you look at Team Alpha Male and the way they coached Song Yadong, I thought they did a tremendous job. That Song Yadong did a really good job in the fight, knowing when to take it to the ground and when not to. So overall, it was a good performance, I think, for Yadong.
Yeah. All right, so we'll go first with how you covered him, the co-main event for Khalil Roundtree. That's now five in a row. Four of those have been finishes, and they've been some decent names. They haven't been the upper echelon, but still, Anthony Smith, Chris Daukaus, Dustin Jacoby, Carl Roberson. All these guys are capable of winning three, losing two. Like, they're very, very solid top 20 guys. Now he's going to have to challenge himself with his next fight, and hopefully it'll be someone that's at least in that top 10 or closer to the top five, maybe, because you want to jump on that. You want to capitalize on that. You know, when someone can say you've won five in a row, four of them being finishes, now you need that name. Now you need that name that basically puts you as a title challenger. I think he's well liked. He's kind of quiet, keeps to himself, but he is explosive. And Anthony Smith's fairly popular. He was once a title challenger himself. So now you got to capitalize and make something of it, because what you don't want is to be Bilal Muhammad. And we'll get to him in just a second. But he has just gotten, you know, a raw deal, 8 in a row, and he's still serving. He's still not even in the one that's actually fighting this weekend. And there's 6 badass welterweights fighting this weekend. More on that one. I'm teasing it. But, yeah, you don't want to be that guy that gets, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, you know what? The next one doesn't get you there. You might need 2 or 3. No. Make noise, you know, and hopefully he does some media this week, Khalil, and can stoke the fires a little. Who knows? But huge, huge win for him, and I'm really, really happy for him. I can't remember his half-brother's name. Donovan Freelo, was that what it was, Goes? He came into the studio with him. Remember when they both came to the studio and they were promoting Tough Enough? Mm-hmm. And I think of the two, I think we were more excited about Donovan because he just talked a little bit more. But I think he was more of a highly regarded amateur fighter at that point than his quiet, older, or quiet, bigger half-brother.
Well, Donovan was fighting for PFL, World Series of Fighting, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And then I want to say he might have popped up on one of them Dana White Contender Series or something.
Yeah. Well, the roles are reversed, man. This guy is a legit 205er who, like I say, has now won 5 in a row. And I you know, Bilal's at 8 in a row. And again, we'll get to him in just a sec. I don't think you, if you win 5 in a row and one of your wins is now Anthony Smith, who at one point fought for the title, and you're finishing fools, then get in there, man. Get in there and ask for a top name. Let's go. Like, otherwise, geez, man, when I just see someone reach a point and then they have to rebuild, oof, it sucks. It really, really sucks. And poor Corey Sandhagen, you know, he took a couple losses. Now he's won 3 in a row. He looks spectacular. And he's got to step aside for Marlon Vera, all because that's what Sean O'Malley wants. That's what the champ wants. And so now Sandhagen's got a battle that fight's not a classic. Because remember, if O'Malley wins and it's a classic, they're 1-1, right? Mm-hmm. There's that. Then there's the recent booking of Merab Dvalishvili. Everyone else is clear number one. He's facing Henry Cejudo at UFC 298 in Anaheim. Imagine if something great comes out of that. You tell me the UFC might not want to promote that one. So, like I say, a guy like a Sandhagen can just get pushed off to the side. Bilal Muhammad, he's kind of been pushed off to the side. You don't want that. I don't want that for anybody. So, hopefully, Khalil gets a huge name next. As far as the main event goes, man, Song Yadong's really, really turned a corner. I remember, you know, I thought he was always good, but right now I think he's actually a great bantamweight, and I think his name should start being included with some of these other ones. Now, he did lose to Corey Sandhagen, and I realize that, right? But I had kind of like wrote him off a little bit after he lost to Kyler Phillips a few years ago. And since then, he's won, you know, Marias, RC Kennedy, Casey Kennedy. By the way, what happened to that guy? Casey Kennedy was a tough SOB. I can't remember what he did after Dominic Cruz beat him. I'm going to see if I can look it up while I'm talking. But I thought Casey Kennedy was like pretty solid as well.
I know he had like some remarks that weren't taken too well. I think he kind of just faded away a little bit, but,
yeah, that's 2 years that guy hasn't fought at all. So
2 years?
2 years that Casey Kennedy hasn't fought. He lost to Dominic and then Song Yadong right after that. But going into that, he was 15-2, and he was good as a bantamweight, and he was good as a flyweight. In fact, Goes, this guy beat Brandon Royval as a flyweight. So he always felt like he could play that card. And now Royval's fighting for a title, right? But he beat him. He beat Ray Borg. So he held his own at both weight classes. I'll see if I can find out what the deal is with this guy, Casey Kenny. Maybe I'll chase him down on social media or whatever, but he's a whole other story. But Song Yadong, man, he's just, I mean, he's jacked. Remember when we met him at the UFC Fight Expo?
Yeah.
He's just really, really strong. He learned English, speaks it well. He's charming. But, man, I mean, he is good across 25 minutes. He just Like I say, he can hit hard. That Team Alpha Male has really, really molded this guy into a monster. So I'm excited about his next fight. I think you can start shoving him in there with some of these other top guys as well.
I love that he spoke English at the end of the fight, which was funny because the translator was just kind of standing there like a dope at one point. Mm-hmm. But I thought he just kind of came across charming. It wasn't the greatest fight ever, but he did dominate the fight. Mm-hmm. And kind of planted the seed, I think, for the next one. I think overall it's good results for him.
Right. Well, like I say, China's big for the UFC. You know, they put out some great athletes. They always do well in the Olympics. I wouldn't say they're famous for, like in the sports that I follow, they've had a few NBA guys, but they're not really, you know, a gold medalist contender or something like that. Same with football. I don't remember many Chinese players playing football or many playing soccer, but or even baseball. Look at what Japan's done in baseball recently in the last 24 hours. But that said, they do well in a lot of different sports like swimming and gymnastics, you know. And so the fact that they're producing some top-notch MMA fighters doesn't shock me at all.
Yeah.
And Chris Gutierrez, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, this is the guy that retired Frankie Edgar. He has some rebuilding to do. I mean, just like I think a lot of the other guys that have taken a few losses and then come back. So we won't give up on him just yet. But yeah, Song Yadong was another level above this guy. Anyway, the rest of the results are as follows. And again, Hack Brass defeated Malarkey. Elliot, congrats to him. That was slick, man, to just go in there on 7 days' notice or whatever it was and not only get the win, he got the stoppage. It all got down in one round, so he didn't have to sweat. Is his cardio going to hold up or any of that stuff? And the 50,000, man, that's incredible. You know what I mean? Like coming, especially as you lead into Christmas and all that. I believe he's got a little daughter. So I'm really, really happy for him. The rest of the fights went as follows. Kevin Jusset defeated Keenan Song. Hyun Sung Park defeated Shannon Ross. Steve Garcia defeated Mel Cazal Costa. Luana Santos, who, by the way, wants some of Misha Tate, defeated Stephanie Egger. Tatsuro Taira remains undefeated. He defeated Carlos Hernandez, Talita Alan Saar. Defeated Ryan Amanda. And so aside from Elliot, bonuses went to Khalil Roundtree for a performance of the night. Nasrat Haqparast for performance of the night. Tim Elliott for performance of the night. And Hyun Sung Park for performance of the night. They didn't give out a fight of the night. And I think they covered most of the bonuses. Tyra didn't get one. That kind of sucks. It'd be nice if the flyweights got some love. Steve Garcia had a finish. He didn't get one. And I think everyone else got covered. So, you know, going back to last week when all those guys got bonuses, like, because they were finishers. Man, I don't know. I just don't know how you can not do that every week. You know, that was literally 7 days ago. You finished. Congrats. You came to fight. It's not his fault, his or her fault, that they were at the apex and they didn't break a gate record and that it wasn't popping, you know, the atmosphere like it maybe was in Austin. Or sometimes when you get sandwiched in between someone that finished and another one that finished, you just feel like there's this roll, right? For the last three fights over an hour, there's just been these finishes. It's crazy. It's not that person's fault. That person's fault is their only thing that they're concerned about is going out there and winning. And if they go out there and win and get a finish, how do you discriminate between these people deserved it and these people deserved it all based on just the mood that the president's in? That's just kind of like, I don't know, bugs me.
Yeah, it's just dumb. There's no consistency.
And I'm just going to bring it up until I drive people nuts, until hopefully one day they just switch it. I would love for them to say in 2024, we're doing this. And the reason we're doing it is because I kept hearing about it. And the guys over at Junkie or these guys or that guy or socials or this. And I figured enough is enough, and we're just going to do it. And so we're going to do it. So we're doing our part. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say. And that was the UFC fight night, pretty much. And, you know, that's what we saw and experienced. That's the last fight night of the year. We got the UFC 296 card on Saturday, and Goz and I will be doing a watch along. So remember to share with your friends, retweets, reposts, all that stuff. It means a lot. We'd love for you to do that. Let's cover a little bit of news, and then we'll get to our guest, Sam Malvi, and then we'll finish up with some fight week stuff. So Henry Cejudo, he is taking on Merab Dvalishvili. This is the type of fight booking that when I look, right, I click MMA Junkie and I see it, I see so many fight bookings, but every once in a while I'm like, yup, that's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I said when I saw these two. They're going to lock up in February at the UFC 298 card in Anaheim, California, same night as Alexander Volkanovski versus Ilya Topuria. Solid.
That's match. Shaping up nice, right? Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a great matchup. And I'm getting more and more into that main event too.
Mm-hmm. So now a quick update on what we know. Some are official, some are rumors, but Alexander Volkanovski versus Ilya Topuria. You can't ask for a better fight at featherweight. This is champion versus a clear number one. Then you got Danny Barlow versus Yasuku Kinoshita. Marcos Rogério de Lima versus Justin Toffa. Zhang Ming Yang versus Brenson Rivero. Anthony Hernandez. So that one is Fluffy, not Alexander the Great. Anthony Hernandez versus Ikram Alaskarov. Andrea Lee versus Miranda Maverick. And now Merab Dvalishvili versus Henry Cejudo. So I see a main event and a clear co-main event. And I think Fluffy's earned maybe getting on a main card. Toffa versus De Lima. I could see two big guys that love to swing getting on there. I don't know if Lee and Maverick squeeze in there, to be honest. I think we should expect more from this fight card. But for a fight card that's still more than 2 months away, they're off to a great start.
Yeah, no, they'll definitely be a little bit more. Especially considering when they come to Southern California in the past, they've been so snake bitten with things that I would imagine this time around, stack it up and make sure everything's good.
I agree. Another news item. Islam Makhachev did some media, and he's saying he wants Gaethje instead of Oliveira or Sarukian. So he was asked, what do you think of Sarukian's win? He said it was impressive. He said it was a nice knockout. And they said, well, he says he can take you out. And he had a nice response. He said, well, he had his chance, and I beat him. And he did it with a nice, coy smile. Loved his response. And then they said, all right, so is the plan still you and Oliveira? And he's like, you know, I don't know. But I would like to fight in March because there's a fight card in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, where Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury just fought our box. Excuse me. That's March 2nd. And then the following week is March 9th, and that's UFC 299 with O'Malley and Vera. Sorry. Yeah, with O'Malley and Vera. So he says he would like to be on either one of those two. And the rumor is that that one might take place in Miami, the one with O'Malley and Vera. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I thought O'Malley can kind of sell tickets. Now, if he wants to be on there because he wants to play second fiddle to O'Malley and cash in on his pay-per-views, hey, I ain't hating on that hustle. Usually the heavyweight class is the main event, so maybe Islam would say, however, I am the main event. Maybe he doesn't care. I don't know. But the reason those dates are important is because he is Muslim, and he observes Ramadan every year. This year's Ramadan, it's not a holiday that you observe on a certain day. It shifts around. And this year will be March 10th to April 8th. So about a month, right? And it involves fasting, prayer, self-reflection, things like that. From sunup to sundown, you refrain from eating and drinking. So that's pretty taxing on a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. And if he can fight on May 2nd in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, or March 9th in what's rumored to be Miami, Florida, then he can do his job before having to break away, you know, for a month while he does Ramadan. And then, of course, later in the year, perhaps he could sneak in a second, maybe even a third fight. Remember, the UFC kind of loves going to Abu Dhabi in October. So you would think that Makhachev would be a leading candidate out there. Now, everything he said was great, Goz, except for he said, I'd like to fight Justin Gaethje because I just don't want to do these rematches. Mm-hmm. Now, you know me. I listen and I'm snarky. I get it. I'm a jerk. I'm a smartass. If he would have just clarified and said, you know, I just came off a rematch and I don't want to do any more. And plus, I want to defend against the lightweight. So, you guys are feeling me, right? Even as inappropriate as it might be, I would probably give him either a fist bump or a mental fist bump if I was there in that scrum. I'd go, we feel you, dog. We want to see you against the lightweight, you know? But don't just say that and leave it there, because the first thing out of me would be, boy, it sure is convenient that you don't want to do rematches after doing one where against the featherweight on late notice. You know, like, where didn't you put your foot down then and say, give me Mateus Gamrot. I'm not into rematches, and I want a lightweight, for crying out loud. Nope. Right. So not only is he saying that, he wants Gaethje, which is fresh. I like Gaethje, and he deserves it. But, you know, they seem committed to Oliveira, although anything can change with the UFC. And I just want to see a lightweight for starters. So whether it's Oliveira or Gaethje, great. I get it. A fresh matchup would be Gaethje. But guess what? That still leaves Oliveira or Sarukian, unless they pit those against each other. But one of those is going to win, and he's going to have to do that rematch, I suppose. I don't know. But I think Makhachev's caught some breaks on the way in. He didn't face a top five guy. He beat Hooker and then Green, and then he fought for the title in his backyard. So he's gotten a lot of things go his way. Yes, he had to go to Australia, but that's when he fought a featherweight. And then somehow in those 2 minutes, they asked him, what's your dream? He goes, I want to fight for a second title. I'm like, oh, my God.
I'm getting sick of hearing that, by the way.
And Leon Edwards, same thing. We haven't gotten to him, so I don't want to get into that yet. But, geez, these guys, man. Like, it was fascinating when McGregor did it. But, boy, has he spoiled us. Everyone wants to do it. What can the UFC do to combat it? I don't know. I think if the UFC were to say, if you're the champ in a weight class, we'll pay you $2 a pay-per-view. And if you want to go to another weight class, then you're the challenger, no pay-per-view. I don't know. I don't know how they could dissuade fighters from wanting to chase that dream. Who knows? On the other hand, I'm like, man, that's pretty cool when someone has those lofty dreams, because he is saying I want to go up. He's not saying I want to go down. So he's not running away from tough competition to get to lighter competition. He wants to go upwards, right? I get it. But, dude, first defend against the lightweight, please.
I think it's up to the UFC to just say no. You can do that. You run the show. Just say no. That we'll have none of that. I think they secretly like it because it's fun to promote it. But what it does is it just waters down divisions. It puts everybody in a dumb spot. Sometimes it makes sense, but not this early. And these guys don't understand that, like, getting a championship belt, I don't want to say it's easy, but a lot of people have them. So the one thing that's going to distinguish you years from now, when we're doing the 30 greatest UFC fighters again, title defenses, baby. What did you do in your division? Did you clean it out and then move up, you know, and challenge? That's when you move up and challenge yourself. These guys feel like they win a belt and they don't have to defend it. They just call the shots at that point. It's not like that.
It is true. It is true. I mean, if you look at our 30 greatest, it was those ones with all those title defenses at the top that were in that top 10, top 5. And then when we really had to split hairs, it was guys that did win a second title, but that was only in addition to defending it 9, 10, 11 times, you know, against and cleaning divisions out twice, a second cycle of fights. You know what I mean? Yeah. Nowadays, that younger generation is just like, you know, a title defense or two, and they want to move up. They want to be billed as the greatest. And it's like, bro, you're putting us in a tough position. You're great. We love covering you, but don't make us remind you. We don't want to be that old guy. Get off my lawn. We don't want to remind you of what's happening. We've just seen it. So cool your jets a little bit. Handle your division. you're still not even greater than your own teammate. You're not the greatest lightweight to come out of Dagestan yet, Makhachev. For one, you lost. Two, you haven't defended it against a lightweight. Do that first. Do that first so we can give you your flowers and go, bro, you may have taught Khabib. I'll look away on the out of the loss, but man, Khabib didn't have five title defenses like you did, or get that second title or whatever. But first things first. Now, I suppose he is the one getting asked the questions. It's not like he's just sitting there saying what he's saying, but I don't know. I guess it just came on the heels of, I don't do rematches, you know, and like,
if we're ever going to wonder things about Khabib, it's probably things like, what would he fare like against a guy like Oliveira, right? Dude, he beat Oliveira. So he's got that. Now go on and beat some of the guys that Khabib also beat. And then before long, we won't be talking about Khabib. We'll be talking about you.
Yeah. Agreed. Anyway, so that was some media that he did out there in the Middle East where he lives, I believe. I think they live in Dubai, if I'm not mistaken. And then they fight in Abu Dhabi. And like I say, there's some rumors of a fight in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And that's cool. It's a fight night. He said he'll probably be at the numbered event, which, again, the rumors Miami on March 9th. In April, they come to Las Vegas. I can't see UFC 300 not being in Las Vegas, but I could be wrong. And so, that one, they'll be into Ramadan. And I just don't see that one being likely for him. So that's cool that he wants to hustle and get one in. That's why I thought it was a bit unusual that it wasn't Makhachev and Oliveira, you know, sandwiched in somewhere. I it was weird that the way they did it. O'Malley won in August and Strickland won in September, yet Strickland fights in January and O'Malley fights in March. Mm-hmm. I don't know if just Strickland wanted to stay busy or if the UFC just felt that made some sense. Volkanovski got knocked out in October and he's fighting. So he fought 2 months after O'Malley and he's fighting 1 month before O'Malley and he got knocked out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Kind of weird.
But if anybody can pull it off, it's somebody like him.
Volkanovski's a Terminator for sure. Let's get to our interview and then we'll come back and finish up with some cool stuff from UFC 296. Some really, really great news that comes out of that fight card. First, it's Sam Alvey, though. He's got Karate Combat coming up. It's this Friday in Las Vegas. So if you're coming for the MMA event on the 16th, on the 15th, you'll have ceremonial weigh-ins, right? And right after that, you can go check out Karate Combat here in Las Vegas. At least I think it's open to the public. I'm not sure. The location's a little bit more of a private affair, but maybe by Thursday's show, I'll actually find out if that's true. I know media's invited, and I have seen crowds there, so I don't know if it's a special invite or what, but it does look pretty cool. And he's fighting. He's fighting on that card. So we'll talk to Smiling Sam. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz are back. We get to talk to one of our favorites, former SoCaler, Sam Alvey, living in Tennessee, but he knew he had to go back to SoCal to get some of that training in. So that's where he's at now. That's why it's sunny in his hood. Karate Combat 43 is where he throws down next. That comes up on December 15th, and you can watch it free on YouTube. His opponent will be Ross Levine, and they're fighting for the vacant heavyweight championship. Now, that's what it says on Tapology, Sam. Is it is it heavyweight or light heavyweight? I'm not sure the weight classes over there.
So it's heavyweight, but it's 205. They're a very foreign organization. Like, all the higher-ups are from around the world. And there's not even from one country. They're from around the world. It's really kind of cool. And so their heavyweight is 205 and up. So I will be the heavyweight champ, but in MMA terms, it would be light heavyweight.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of Ross Levine? You're going to help us out a little bit. I read up on him. I saw some stuff that he said about you. He used to kickbox over at Glory, so he's not a wrestler coming over to test his hands. He is a kickboxer coming over to test his hands. But your thoughts on him? He says he's been keeping it cold with you, even though he respects you, but from a distance.
Yeah, I haven't picked up on the coldness. He seems like a nice dude. No, he's very talented, very fast. He's one of the first people when I found Karate Combat. He was one of the first people I started watching. I didn't even know that he was the middleweight champ at the time. I said, wow, this guy's moving well. Like he's got that very traditional karate style where it's in and out, but it's all about speed. And he will be the fastest man I've ever fought. So I'm really looking forward to it. He made a fan out of me before the fight happened, before the fight was announced. And then I got blessed with the fights. And, all right, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And now that you got a fight under your belt, you got a second camp that you've done. Has that rejuvenated you in any way? You know, you kind of only have to focus on stand-up, not everything else.
Yeah, I feel great. I still do as much jiu-jitsu and as much wrestling as ever before because that's what I know how to do. But I've been able to open up with my hands. I've been able to open up with my kicks. I've been able to do some of that fancy stuff. You know, the spinning hook kicks. Or what was it Raymond Daniels did? The 180 into a knee punch or something. I do those all the time now. I tell everyone, at the end of this fight, Raymond Daniels is going to be jealous of the cool stuff I can do.
You know, this might sound silly, but is it almost along the lines of, you know, in football, you got the quarterback and you got these four grown-ass men trying to knock his block off, right? And then you got five men trying to protect them. That's in the game. But in practice, we can't risk the quarterback. They throw on that bright yellow jersey, which means you can get to him, but just touch him. That means that he's done. We're all the same team. Is that almost what Karate Combat is like? You can open up this arsenal of weapons that you have because you know someone's not shooting a double leg, for example, or, you know, I don't know, some of the other techniques that we see in MMA that sometimes stifle strikers.
Yeah, I've been telling everyone this is the fastest combat sport that's out there. It's faster than MMA, significantly faster than kickboxing, faster than boxing. It's just a constant action. And all of the athletes that are in Karate Combat, they have all done the karate tournaments, the taekwondo, point sparring, the stuff like that, where they have the power, but they need to be fast more than they need to be powerful. And so when that bell rings, the fight is on. They're moving, they're grooving, they're spinning, that they're doing some really cool stuff. And that we get to fight in a pit as opposed to a cage or a ring, it makes it all the sweeter. The pit is really, it's so cool. I mean, I'm not disappointed. I got a knockout in a minute and 1 second or something my last fight, but I am disappointed I didn't get to play in the pit a little bit more because it's like a playground for fighters.
Hey, Sam. So, like, in this situation here with Karate Combat, no matter what happens, you know, whether you get three fights in, five fights in, do you you feel like you're always going to have that on your back, like that you're representing, you're the MMA guy? You know, it seems like these guys are, you're the MMA guy kind of invading their space. Do you feel like a part of the team over there, or are you in a way still kind of representing MMA?
No, Karate Combat's really made me feel at home. Like they understand that although I have made my career, my name doing MMA, they understand I'm also 6-1 in Muay Thai. And I'm on a 6-fight winning streak. I have done pancreation. I've done weapons. That's what got me in everything. And I started my career in a Kenpo karate dojo. I worked there for 4 or 5 years, like between 4 and 5 years. Then I went out to Team Quest, where one of my head striking coaches, Tarek Safadine, who's a black belt in both Taekwondo and Kyokushin karate. So it has been very much part of my arsenal. And now I don't have to worry about the Division I All-American wrestler coming out and just holding me down. I can really open up. If you watch my MMA fights, I've always liked my back foot against the cage to help prevent the takedowns. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I can push forwards because they're not going to take me down because they don't need to. They're faster than that.
I heard you got some pretty good rounds out there at Dan Henderson's gym, guys like Dominic Reyes. But I have to imagine, if they're helping you, you're probably helping them. What were some of like those MMA rounds? Were you able to do some of that? And is that fun, you know, to be able to still do some of the MMA stuff?
I still love doing the MMA stuff. I mean, there's so much. It's not karate versus MMA. It's fighting. And at the end of the day, you are just fighting. You're trying to beat another man up. So whether I'm doing it with takedowns in jiu-jitsu or doing it with just a knockdown and some ground and pound, I'm still getting there. So, yeah, I'm actually on my YouTube channel. I'm going to post all my rounds with Jared Bandera and Dominic Reyes, Diego Vasquez, and a couple other guys from yesterday. I'm going to post it here in about an hour. And I'm I've had so much fun working with guys in the last year since leaving the UFC. I've tried to become a true 205er. I've increased my weight. I'm strong. I'm as strong as I've ever been, stronger than I've ever been. I've done some good weightlifting as well as continuing my conditioning. And so I got to go out and hang with, you know, the heavyweight in Jared or the light heavyweight in Dominic. Diego, he's close to the super heavyweight. I was able to go out there and really intimidate them, or maybe not intimidate, but compete with them on size. And that was a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to stepping in that pit and doing the same thing.
You know, a lot of times where we used to be able to see you is when we would go visit our parents. They don't live too far away from Dan's gym, but now you might be visiting us in Las Vegas, I hear. What's the deal with Sean Strickland? Can you explain this? You guys are going to spar. What's going on?
Yeah, so Sean Strickland and I, we're buddies. We helped each other. We've trained together. We've almost lived together. We're friends. And I've been telling my YouTube channel, I have Smile and Sam on YouTube, that as soon as I'm monetized, I'm going to get out to Las Vegas and I'm going to spar Sean Strickland and I'm going to post it. I'm going to film it and post it for everyone to see. And as of maybe right this minute, I have become monetized on YouTube. And so I'm keeping true to my promise. I'm getting out to Vegas here in the next day or two, and I'm going to spar Sean Strickland. I just got to get that bum to call me back. He becomes the world champion, and he's too big to text his old chum, Smiling Sam, back. But maybe I'll just get out there. I'll just show up at his gym, and we'll go from there.
Is it just to show how two guys can get down and put on an entertaining sparring match, or is this to settle any form of a friendly grudge or anything like that?
No grudge at all. No grudge at all. If we were actually fighting, I feel bad for DDP because he has to fight Sean next. Sean has been, he is about the best I've ever seen. It's between him and Dan Henderson are the best I've ever worked with. And they're both just terrifying in that ring. But I'm one of the few guys that is willing to spar with him every round he wanted. And he was willing to spar with me every round I wanted. We've always had fun doing it. It's been some of my best rounds. And he's my best training partner, even though I haven't gotten to train with him in quite a while. So there's no grudgery to be had. But I'm looking forward to it. Whether it's filmed or not, I love sparring with that man.
Why did you guys split up, I guess? You said best sparring partner you ever had. He's always looking for rounds, so he'd probably say some kind things about you, I imagine. We'd have to ask him, but how is it that you guys weren't able to unite, I guess, like, since those days?
Because Vegas is too hot. I'm a redhead. Vegas is a desert. I can't live there. So he went to Vegas. We both escaped California, but he went to Vegas. I went to Tennessee. I've got a great gym now in Tennessee in Guardian MMA, and then I work a lot of Checkmat MMA as well down in Chattanooga. And those gyms have helped me tremendously, but I couldn't bring myself to live in Vegas. It was on a short list of places to go. I would, you know, just wear the sunblock if I had to. But I at the end of the day, I didn't want to live in Vegas, and he was pretty happy doing it. But both states allow us and encourage us to carry guns, and so we're both happy where we're at.
All right, so I'm buying some stuff, but not other, and I'll tell you why. Like Go said, our parents live very close to Temecula, and in the summer, it's brutal there too. Uh-huh. The heat, all right? You would have saved in state taxes here at the time, because this was about 5 years ago, I think, when Sean left Team Quest, maybe even more. You would have had the benefit of the UFCPI. I know you're state free tax in Tennessee, but I don't know. The heat thing though, I can't let that one go by. There's no ocean breeze in Temecula.
yeah, but my team is here. The Dan Henderson's team is here. I'm very dedicated to my team. Even now, I haven't lived in Temecula in 2 years, and mm-hmm. when push comes to shove, I'm coming back to my roots to get beat up by Hendo and a couple of the other guys.
Is Levine, by the way? Let's get back to him. December 15th, Karate Combat. Check it out, folks. Free on YouTube, by the way. And this is a title fight. Is Levine overlooking you? I saw a comment where he thought it was going to be him until in December. It's him and Alvy in December.
Oh, man. What bad luck he could have had. No, I hadn't heard Till was even interested in coming over. I hope he's overlooking me. Everyone does. I'm a friendly fella. I'm easy to you know, not pay attention to. Let him overlook me. He'll find out real quick that the four guys he's beaten don't add up to the 80 plus people I've fought. I mean, it's something. He's very talented. Like, I saw him and I became a fan before we were ever scheduled to fight. Now that I get to fight him, I'm like, okay, I got to get a real camp because this guy is real deal. But if you look at who he's fought, you combine their records, they're like 4-12. He's not fought the people I have fought. He does not have the repertoire of opponents that I have beaten, that I've competed with. I have beaten some. I made it to top 10 in the world at one point in the UFC, and I've beaten current top 10 fighters. So he definitely brings a threat. There are things I have to watch out for, but the experience is in my back pocket. The experience is where I, you know, is my strongest suit.
What would this title mean to you, Sam?
I've been able to go into a promotion and impress them so much in one fight that they offer me a title shot against a reigning champion, a weight lower, it means the world to me. And now I'm going to go out there. I'm going to win this belt, and I'm going to do everything I can to give back to Karate Combat. I'm going to make sure Karate Combat is the next biggest combat sport in the world. I'm going to make sure that they get out there and I help them become the sport karate. Sport karate is the wrong term because it is full contact. The place people want to not only tune into on Friday nights, Saturday nights to watch, but talk about Monday morning at the water cooler. It is the most fun I have ever had fighting, and I've only had one fight with him so far. I am looking forward to this so much, and when I get that gold belt, I am going to wear it everywhere.
Is this where you'll end your career? Is the door to MMA completely closed?
Absolutely not. I love Karate Combat, but I'm a fighter. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a fighter. I want to fight. I will fight anyone, anywhere, at any time. The whole reason I ended up with Karate Combat is because the fighters in BKFC are a bunch of sissies. The fighters in MMA in general are a bunch of sissies. It is not what it used to be. When I started fighting, a fight was offered, you say yes. I mean, before you know who it is. And now I have said yes to this last year to 10 different fights and 5 different promotions, and they all say no. They're all intimidated. I finally talked to Karate Combat and said, listen, I need fights. I need people that are willing to fight, willing to step up and get in the pit with me. And they said, all right, we got you covered. And without hesitation, I have been given fights. People have agreed that, yes, this is what fighting is about, fighting. I'm not going to, you know, pick my opponent or be too scared or anything like that. Like so many fighters in the BKFC have turned out to be. I am here for action. I will fight the best in the world, and I will become the best in the world.
Can you tell us who's turned you down across these different offers you've had? Is that something you would make public, or?
At this point, I can't even remember their names. I've said, like I've always been the guy. It's offered, and they said, hey, you want to fight Brandon Allen on 3 days' notice, up a weight class? I said, yeah, okay, whatever. Before I saw who he was. It's always been me. So BKFC had said, hey, you want to fight on this day? I said, sure, let's do it. I said, all right. And then they just kind of stopped getting back to me. So, okay, I guess it's not happening. And that's just been the case in so many different organizations over the last year and a half. For me, I just, whatever, fine. I'll find a real fighter.
Well, I'm glad you found one, and we're excited to see you back in action with Karate Combat. Folks, December 15th, you can watch on YouTube for free. And this is a title fight for Smiling Sam. Sam, go get him, man. It'd be nice to see you wear that gold, not just on that night, but like you said, you'll be rocking it everywhere.
Oh, I'm wearing it everywhere. It is going to be a new part of my uniform at all times.
There you go.
Hey, and I'll let you guys know if when the Sean Strickland thing comes. Maybe you come and watch it.
Sounds good. Let us know.
Yeah, sounds great, my guys.
All right. Take care, Sam. See you.
All right. Have a good one, fellas.
Smiling Sam. Boy, I'd love to see him and Strickland spar. If it's, well, I won't be able to. Maybe you might be able to, Goz, if they spar this week. I don't know if you'll want to do it that close to Karate Combat, but he says he's always down.
Yeah, I mean, they're pals, but that's the thing is, like, Sean he's basically fighting, dude, at that point. I know he's cornering him, though. I think that should be pretty fun.
Strickland's cornering Alvy?
Yeah.
That is cool. All right. Thank you to Smiling Sam for doing that. Good luck in your fight, Smiling Sam. And don't forget that card also has Anthony Pettis against Benson Henderson. And so now UFC 296, reminder number 3, Goz and I will be hosting a watch-along starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific this Saturday
on MMA Junkie. We will watch the fights along with you guys. The first four are free for everybody, right? So we'll watch those together. And then when it's time for the pay-per-view at 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m., sorry, 7 p.m. Pacific, we go in different directions. So we have to order it, and we do, all of them. We don't miss them. But I realize not everyone orders every single pay-per-view. So if you decide not to order it, just keep hanging with us and let us tell you what's happening in real time. All right. Bilal Muhammad, we found out today, is the backup fighter for Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington, the main event. Now, Bilal Muhammad could have very rightfully have been the title challenger, but we're past that. They already made this fight. It's happening. But what did you make of the fact that he said he just got the call? Like, does that almost tip you off? Like, there's trouble behind the scenes? You know, he made a good point. The last few pay-per-views have been spoiled one way or another. If you'll recall, John Jones fell out, so they had to do this whole Aspinall versus Pavlovich thing. Then in October, Oliveira fell out, so they had to bring in Volkanovski. Because, you know, Makhachev doesn't do rematches. Mm-hmm. And then, hell, if we even go back to September, I mean, they brought in Israel Adesanya to face off against Dricus Duplessis. That didn't go down, so we had Sean Strickland step up. But then he had more time, more notice, and of course he pulled off the epic win. But yeah, Bilal makes a good point. They got to insure these, and they did. Now, I thought they didn't have to in the sense that, for one, Bilal says he don't do the backup role. Well, he is, and he's getting paid. Money talks, I suppose. But the other one was you got Ian Gary against Vicente Luque, and then you got Shavkat Rakhmonov facing Stephen Thompson. Now, of those four, I don't know that you could just say one of you four steps in because Bilal. I mean, I guess if you said it and said because Bilal Muhammad doesn't do the backup, then that's Bilal Muhammad's bad. He loses.
Right.
But maybe they went to Bilal saying, hey, look, what if this happens? Would you be okay with getting jumped over? But he says he's been in shape and ready to go. He'll probably make a decent paycheck. He probably won't fight because most of the time they don't. But I never felt like we didn't have insurance. I felt like we did. The only thing that would have sucked is we probably would have had someone that really didn't deserve it. Although, when you're 16-0, goes like Shavkat Rakhmonov, and all 16 have been finishes, I mean, you're pretty outstanding in my eyes, and I suppose they could put him in there, and I don't think I'd bat an eye.
Nah, I mean, as long as Bilal Muhammad is the guy that turned down the spot, then yeah, you could do something like that. But I, for me, it's like when you find out this late in the game, to me, it's like what they call an invitation. You know, when you invite somebody at the end because you're hoping they don't have enough time to say yes and come to the party or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got that disrespectful tone to it. But if he can make a nice little paycheck, and we do know that he's just kind of been training, good for him.
Do you think there's a chance they asked Bilal and he said, fuck that, I ain't no fucking backup fighter, fuck them, blah, blah, blah. Then Ali goes, all right, bro, but are you sure you want to turn down six figures? You know, that could be $100,000, $200,000, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, yeah, I suppose you're right. I'm only 15 pounds over. I'll go in there. If I get to fight, great. And if I don't, which is more like the scenario, Christmas money, you know. Maybe you think it kind of goes like that a little bit. Money usually
I think it could. But I also, like, personally, I don't know that I wouldn't say, you know what? These rarely happen. So I'm going to say yeah. But if it does end up where I do have to fight and I don't feel like I'm ready, I'm just going to say I can't or something, you know, or I don't know. And let one of those other dudes step in. I don't know. I don't know how serious this is for him, like being 100% against one of these guys for the belt. I don't even know that, like, there might be a fight in the back, man. Those three people do not get along.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say I'm not fighting. I changed my mind. I think I just might say I had it wrong, guys. You asked me what 9 days ago. I thought I could make weight, but body shut down. Sorry. I think he might get forgiven there. Because it's such late notice. But fighters have this mentality where I just think they just don't know how to say no. And so that's why they're always going to say yes. I think when it finally sets in that you may have done messed up is when you step up, it is you, and then you get crushed. Like, I bet you if you were to pull Masvidal aside now, and say, bro, you've been retired for over a year now. No, less than a year, but it's been at least a year or two since you've had your title fights. Let's ask you, let's shoot us straight. Was it a mistake to take that fight on short notice and fly half the way around the world? How's he going to tell you that it wasn't? For sure he will. He'll go, yeah, but the money was good. I had to take a chance. Fill in the blank, this, that, whatever. None of them are scared to throw down. They're all just going to throw down at any moment. But they dangle that carrot out there, and you just got to pounce on it. You feel indestructible as is, I suppose. So, and plus, from time to time, dude, I don't want to sound like a dick, right? Luke Rockhold punished Bisping pretty good. I have to believe, again, if you pull Bisping aside and go, hey, on 3 weeks' notice, I know you had some confidence, and I know you thought, hey, there's a chance here. But, I mean, tell us about, there had to have been some doubt. I think Bisping would shoot you straight and go, hell yeah, you don't remember him blasting me in Australia? I mean, I think he one-arm guillotined him. He manhandled him. So I think even he would tell you. But all it takes is just that one crack of the jaw, you know? And so that's why I think the fighters go for it. And that is one of the beauties of our sport, is that there's enough history of all these miracles and events that take place that are so crazy. Even Sarah against GSP, we laughed at the fact that the winner of Tough goes straight to the title. We just thought they were getting served up. Travis Luter has Anderson Silva mounted, by the way. Of course, he didn't make weight, he wouldn't have won the title, but he was dominating in that regard. Then he gets swept and loses. And then Matt Serra actually knocks the guy out, knocks one of the greatest out, knocks out the number one guy on the MMA Junkies 30 Greatest UFC Fighters list. I mean, those are the things that take place in our history that always make us go, well, you know, maybe, and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Bilal Muhammad, it's big news. It's picked up big traction on our website, on our YouTube channel. Shout out to Farah Hanoun for landing that. And Bilal, yeah, just kind of telling us what the deal is. Now, how about Ian Garry saying, I fear for my family? I know we haven't discussed it as much on this show. Mm-hmm. If you peruse YouTube, there's a lot of influencers, YouTube stars, internet sensations, whatever they're called. But there's people that entertain me. I'll actually say that. And some that are like all over this from day one, like a guy named Red Pill. An Irish fella who covers it, and he's been on it. And quite frankly, if he were to go, what do you think of my coverage? I'd tell him, fuck, you hit a home run. But I would say that maybe, like, I want to hear you talk about other stuff. Like, he's beating this one to death. Like, if it was a pinata, every candy's out, and that pinata's in pieces goes. And then, like, your Jesse on Fires and your gurus and MMA gurus and some others, they've been putting it out there. So that's why I kind of have some of the deets on this that I think normally may not have found out. But, you know, Ian Garry's in this relationship where the wife has a former husband, her ex-husband's part of the team, and he actually trains, or I think he either does the nutrition or strength and conditioning for Ian Garry. So it's kind of complicated on that end. And then, of course, the way Ian Garry's been acting, you know, with attacking Neil Magny and, you know, what'd you say? You say you beat me like a kid? Oh, my God, you beat your kid. You know, Neil Magny said it created problems on his personal life. And then, of course, he had that thing with Jeff Neal because Neal was arrested once. So he sold T-shirts that had his mugshot on it. All right, love and war. I get it. But now he's saying he's fearing coming to the United States. He fears for his family's safety. But, bro, didn't you kind of make your own bed?
Yeah, it's a little bit of karma, man, when you really think about it. I don't know that you could say fear for their safety, but, you know, as far as fear of, like, exposure and people saying things and maybe something coming out of that, yeah, I could see that. But like George said, you kind of made your own bed, you know, like there's not much you can do in that situation.
And he told Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour, every move's been calculated. The wife's behind it all. She's crafted this. And so guess what? He made her a public figure. She's his manager, I guess, as well. There's interviews with him and I think Sean Sheehan where he's asked a question, then leans back, and then she gives her input on how he should answer it. So he's made her kind of like almost like a wrestling manager, just kind of like part of the deal, right? But then what happened was it opened up her personal life, and it was discovered that she had written a book years ago on how to become a successful WAG, wife and girlfriend. It's a term mostly used for soccer WAGs, wives and girlfriends, and the lives that they lead. And so basically it was a book on how to become one. And, you know, she detailed how this will cost you, I think, $50,000. You got to get the boob job. You got to do this. And who knows what's in the book and how you, you know, I guess make yourself available for the athletes, right? I don't know. So, yeah. I mean, it, you know, and so the wife's kind of, in fact, you almost could say the wife followed her own advice. She landed Ian Garry. I mean, I think she's 40 and he's 26 or something. So it's a, it's unusual already in that regard. But look, they had a kid. They're married. It's his wife. I'm not in the business of, you know, going after that. I'm only in the business of saying, Ian, it's hard to really listen to you and take you serious when you kind of really did a number on Neil Magny and you kind of did a number on Jeff Neal. Like, I get it. Trash talk, following suit and Connor's footstep, being undefeated, trying to get noticed. But I think he could have done a lot of this just with how outstanding he fights, by the way, and a couple of clever jokes and this or that. But when you kind of made it a little bit personal, I don't know that you can, you know, not expect it to come your way too.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100% going to be coming his way regardless of family comes or not. But I don't think it comes down to safety. That part I disagree.
And now you have this. Imagine what next week's going to be like, Goes. You're going to have a fun week. I'm a little jealous because, you know, Karate Combat and then the fights are in town. A lot of people are in town. I think there's a little mini reunion between the Junkie staff. And so Adam Hunter's doing his thing. So I think you're going to have fun, but I think if I were you, I would go. You and I went to the last press conference. I think this one's going to be something else, dude. You got Covington, and he's got his loose lips, right? And Leon Edwards, obviously, that's one matchup. And then Garry, he fights Vicente Luque. And Luque's a quiet guy, but I think it's even upset Luque and the Kill Cliff gang and those guys over there. You saw a few weeks ago, Brendan Allen saying, I want a piece of Ian Garry. Shavkat Rachmanov, he's going to be on the dais, I imagine, with the translator. And they're going to ask him, are you the guy that knocked out Ian Garry? Because there's rumors of somebody knocking him out or getting the best of him in practice. So I don't know if that'll come into play. But I think it's going to be a pretty interesting press conference.
Yeah, for sure.
Brandon Moreno, for those that didn't hear, he's the backup for the Royville and Pantoja fight. We kind of covered that in the last show, so I don't want to get into it again. But we're going to wrap it up for here. One last reminder that Goes and I on Saturday, December 16th, we'll be doing a watch-along for UFC 296. So don't forget to watch along with us. And again, if you can tell a pal, we'll, if every single one of you people that listen and tune in told a pal, we double our audience. Tomorrow and every Monday, don't forget to check out Spinning Backclick. It is our weekly talk show about us covering the latest topics in mixed martial arts, probably the biggest five news stories from the past week. Myself and Goes and our colleagues at Junkie, they rotate. It's a great show, produces great content. Everybody that tunes in says they love it. And it's every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. As I say that, tomorrow's show, December 11th, you'll hear that. And then on the 18th, we'll have another one that'll recap the UFC 296 show. And then on the 25th, we're obviously off. So I'm telling you that right now. And it could be that the week after that, the first, we'll either be off or we'll maybe pre-tape or do something at some point during the week. I don't know if it'll be live, though, on New Year's Day. But more on that coming up. All right, folks. Take care. We'll see you soon. God be a champion.